Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Warlord Games official podcast, the podcast where we talk about the excellent games that Warlord makes for us to put and enjoy on the tabletop. Now, if you have listened to the show for any time, you would know that not too long ago, if you look back through the episodes, we had a fantastic chat with one of our favorite friends, Rick Priestley, game designer extraordinaire, to talk about Hail Caesar version 2.0 that came out a while ago. But if you've also been paying attention to Warlord, both the website and this podcast, you would have heard us talking about the different epic scale games that they've been putting out in recent years, mostly Black Powder stuff. The games are incredibly popular. And over time, the way the epic scale miniature stands have been designed and how they're being produced by Warlord have only improved, and just the detail and the technology that is being implemented to create the models to put on the tabletop in this new small scale that allows you to make and represent truly, shall I say, epic conflicts on the tabletop. It's just incredibly impressive. Today, as I was talking about a second ago, we have a new game, not just Black Powder. We have a new epic scale game written by our friend Rick Priestley, Hail Caesar. And we're going to be talking about the Punic Wars. Now, joining me today is a man who did a lot of the heavy lifting with the actual history and some of the scenarios in the new epic scale box. Ben Hampshire, welcome to the Warlord Games show. How you doing, man?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. Excited to talk about Hail Caesar.
Oh, right? It's such a cool game in 28 mil. But now we are talking about it in just the massive battles that we can play out on the tabletop, particularly for the Punic Wars, is just really cool. You know a lot more about this historical time period than I do. I am definitely the layman, but can you talk a little bit about how the epic scale and the larger scale of battles going from 28 mil to 10 mil, how that sort of accentuates the battles that people can play using these smaller miniatures?
It just, games always feel so much cooler and more epic when you've got a ton of stuff on the table. It looks more like a real battle as opposed to a skirmish. And when you're playing historical war games, especially, and when you're looking at playing scenarios of actual historical battles, you want it to look like the actual battle. And they're often much bigger than we can represent with 28mm models.
Absolutely.
Getting the extra stuff on there really helps.
Absolutely. And also, I mean, for these battles in particular, if we're talking Hannibal, we're talking elephants. And to have not just one or two elephants, but you can have quite a few in this scale on the tabletop, that is a real spectacle and a real joy to do.
Yeah, it definitely looks impressive. The elephants are like a... I think when people... obviously, when they think of Hannibal and when they think of the Carthaginians, the elephants are always a thing people imagine. It's nice to get, you know, six or eight down as opposed to just one as a token in your list.
When we talked about the American Civil War expansion for Epic Scale, there was a lot of discussion about similar models being designed in different colors and how that really made for something that looked visually stunning on the tabletop. But lines of riflemen in the Civil War are totally different from Romans. Romans have a very distinctive look. They're always jammed together. They have their shield walls, and the formations are legendary. So Warlord could have just gone out and designed their Romans in a similar way, but they didn't. And so for the first time ever, we're seeing a new style of design for the miniatures in this game. And I'm really excited about this. And I mentioned it in the preamble, so I'm going to get to it now. I know I'm jumping ahead. But to have three rows of soldiers on each stand makes for the densest epic scale miniatures we've seen yet. But because of the way they're designed, they're actually remarkably easy to paint because they come in three separate rows that combine together tightly. But the middle one, all there is the helmets, the shoulders, and the spears sticking up. So it actually, and the tops of their shields, so it looks like you are actually getting those three densely packed rows in one formation. But on the tabletop, wow, that really pops. I know that you weren't in on the miniature side of the design here, but as someone who's familiar with the history, you have to be really excited about that.
Yeah, they look great as well. These tiny formations, the shields look amazing, and they're always like a good way of getting smaller scale armies to pop with these details like big shields. They look really good. They look very cool lined up together. The formation, you'll be able to, the manipular formation when they're lined up will look amazing.
Yeah, and I'm also looking at the new Libyans, the new Gaelic Celts, the Numidian cavalry, just the riot of color on the shields for those units is amazing. And those are your more traditional spread out epic scale as far as the regular stands that we've seen previously. So it's a nice combination of new technology to really dig into how the Romans were on the tabletop, but also how you can get more loosely lined up troops in formations on the tabletop. Let's talk a little bit more about Hannibal and the Punic Wars. Can you give us a background of the time period that's covered in this box?
The First Punic War, I suppose, is where we'll start. At the time, Rome isn't the Roman Empire. It's just a small republic in North Italy and Central Italy, I suppose. And Carthage, likewise, is a similarly sized state based in North Africa. They fought their first war, the First Punic War, was largely naval. Rome built a truly colossal number of ships, almost bankrupted itself, had to get its citizens to pay for its last fleet, did eventually win out after a long guerrilla war on Sicily, and made a deal with Carthage to not be at war with each other. They defined the line of their land border, which was in Spain. The main Carthaginian general for that one was a guy called Hamilcar, who was Hannibal's father. He was pretty good, but when he died, his son took over his army, his posting in Spain, and had been raised to not like the Romans. He wanted to go to war with Rome. The Carthaginian Senate didn't, but Hannibal effectively just took matters into his own hand and started the war anyway. Mm-hmm. And what followed was almost 20 years of Hannibal invading Italy, crossing the Alps famously with his elephants and his army in tow, and spending a lot of time handing the Romans a lot of their worst ever defeats, and really putting the fledgling Roman Empire onto the brink of just complete collapse. Unfortunately for him, his brothers and various subordinates weren't as good at generals as him, and they largely lost Spain, which really Carthage needed to keep its money going. And you had this weird, parallel where Hannibal was in Italy, winning almost every battle he fought, wandering around the Roman heartland, burning with impunity. But Carthage could never help him do it, because Hannibal's brothers were off in Spain, mostly losing. They had a good start to the war. They eventually beat up... Well, one of my problems writing this book was that Scipio Africanus, the famous one, has the exact same name as his father. So in the early war, Scipio Africanus' father and his uncle are in Spain. They eventually lose to Hannibal's brothers, but Hannibal's brothers are then roundly beaten by Scipio Africanus, who takes Spain, which really causes Carthage to simply not have enough money anymore. They need their Spanish silver mines, they need the access to Spanish manpower, and as Spain falls, Hannibal has to return to Africa to defend it from Scipio's invasion, which obviously he famously eventually fails to do, culminating in this huge epic battle at Zama, which will look amazing with these miniatures. You'll get so much stuff on the table. It will look really good.
Yeah, the miniatures for this look absolutely sensational. And of course, I've mentioned it before, but if you're going to mention Hannibal, of course you have to mention the elephants. As the pure layman, how many conflicts do you see those big beasties in?
Hannibal, the Romans didn't use them. These are not Indian elephants. These are not African elephants. These are a type of, from what I remember, like forest elephants from North Africa. So they're a little smaller. Hannibal had a bunch in his initial army in Spain, so from Carthage. And he, when he crossed the Alps, brought his elephants with him through the mountains. So they're present in his early battles in Italy. Hannibal's Italian elephants did eventually all die off before Canine, and this period in the south. But every time the Carthaginians fought in Spain, normally they would have brought a few fresh elephants. And obviously, famously at Zama, they had a pretty large contingent of elephants. And the way the Romans dealt with them and their evolution of tactics against them was one of the big changes they made as the war progressed. They really had a solid plan for dealing with the elephants by the end. Scipio had this idea that as the elephants charged forward, Hannibal wasn't, for all that he was a good general, Hannibal didn't really use his elephants very well. Both sides improved their tactics. The Carthaginians had a problem early where elephants would rampage through their own lines if they were sufficiently scared early. So Hannibal sent his elephants in early, and Scipio had his maniples open gaps to allow the elephants through to the back where they could be dealt with by like skirmishers and missile troops and stuff, and really neutralize the threat before it became a big problem for them, which was a change.
Mm-hmm.
And worked pretty well, obviously.
Well, Ben, as we said earlier, one of the key roles that you've had in this project is taking the excellent Hail Caesar rules that our friend Rick Priestley wrote, and then for this box in particular, adapting and creating a bunch of scenarios, which is really one of the big hallmarks of the epic scale games, is recreating these awesome battles on the tabletop. Can you tell us about some of the scenarios that we can find in this box?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the hallmarks of Hannibal's career, especially early, was his ability to pick the ground and his ability to set ambushes and set traps. So there'll be an excellent scenario for the Trebia where his brother Mago leapt out from behind the Romans and really ruined their day in a battle where the Romans were doing pretty well. There's obviously a scenario for the ambush at Trasimene where the Romans were roundly slaughtered at the lakeside, but the Roman player will have a chance to try and escape and win some honor for the day. There's an excellent scenario for Cannae with Hannibal's famous formation and rules to allow the Carthaginian player to fully enact Hannibal's plan to comprehensively defeat a much larger Roman force led by Varro. In Spain, you can play a cool link scenario where you can relive the downfall of the brother Scipio in the early war. And also you can see the start of Scipio Africanus' career and his early triumphs as he develops his own tactical style and begins to build the game plan that will beat Hannibal and beats up Hannibal's brothers. And obviously there'll be a huge 12-foot table scenario for Zama. Have a properly large recreation of it. Lots of cool special rules to allow you to try and use the tactics that the generals used on the day, or to obviously space to make your own.
So from that point, does it continue into the rest of Hannibal's career?
Hannibal's career really ended at Zama in terms of like things that will be interesting to Wargame. He spent some time governing. Sorry, I should say, like, I'll let you call this, but Zama is really the end of the war. So the book effectively covers the war starts in 218 and ends with Zama in 203. Hannibal's career after Zama is, it's not uninteresting, but it's not the thing you'd write Wargame supplements about. He governed Carthage for a bit until the Romans kicked him out. He went and hung around various Roman enemies in Turkey, led a fleet, and then he was hiding in Antioch, I think. Hiding's the wrong word. He was in Antioch when the king lost to the Romans, and the Romans demanded they hand him over, and he chose to end his own life instead. The one interesting thing that Hannibal did do after the war is he met with Scipio Africanus. They were both at a dinner party hosted by someone else. And when Scipio asked Hannibal who he thought the best general of all time was, Hannibal put himself at third. Which is interesting, because I think if you looked at this period, a lot of people now would rank Hannibal higher than that.
Yeah.
He gave Alexander the Great, obviously, and then he gave Pyrrhus above himself. And I think, at least in terms of profile, Hannibal belongs above Pyrrhus.
And yeah, absolutely.
Probably in terms of his resume as well, even if he lost in the end. Famously, Scipio, slightly offended, asked where Hannibal would place him, and Hannibal said that Alexander at first, Pyrrhus at second and himself at third. And when Scipio asked Hannibal where he would have placed himself if he'd won against Scipio, Hannibal said he would definitely have put himself first then, which was a kind of an elaborate flattery for Scipio. Because in that, Hannibal set Scipio apart from the from other commanders by saying that if he'd beaten him, it would have sufficiently enhanced his resume, but also kind of put him down because he didn't put Scipio in the top three.
Yeah, right.
Despite having lost to him. So like a double-edged compliment, right?
Yeah, exactly. Not the kind of compliment we all love to get. With this box set, do you know off the top of your head how many missions or scenarios we get to play out?
I believe it's 10.
10, brilliant. And for those who are wondering, not only is there the general box set for this, there will be army boxes for Rome and Carthage. So you can play particular factions in your own particular army and really bulk them out for those big tables that Ben was talking about a second ago. But there's also something else in this box. And I'm working off of a little something from the Warlord website that said, "Your eyes do not deceive you. Nestled within the Hannibal battle set, you will find a copy of Scipio. This compact, quick-to-learn battle game allows players to recreate the unique manipular tactics of the Roman army of the period and can be played essentially out of the box. Just clip the miniatures, put them on the bases, and it's just another way to use the fantastic figures and is exclusive to the Hannibal battle set." So if you jump in on this game, you not only get the great Hail Caesar content, you can use the same miniatures to play another game that's already in the box set. This is a first in any of the epic boxes we've seen so far, and I think sounds really cool. Ben, I know you didn't work on that, but that does sound great, doesn't it?
It does. What I can do is talk about the manipulative system, if you like.
Yes, please do.
Warfare in this period, aside from the Romans, so obviously I'm going to come to with a manipular system, often looked like two battle lines, often what we'd call a phalanx, which is a block of heavy infantry with spears, just kind of bumping and grinding until one side was broken or something happened on the flanks. Mm-hmm. The Romans, after getting pretty roundly housed by the Samnites in the mountains, realized that this wasn't going to cut it anymore, and they developed this thing called the manipular system. Their infantry was divided into three groups, the Hastati, the Principe, and the Triarii. Romans at the time weren't all required to serve, but every Roman citizen was told that they might have to serve. And so often they kept up their training just in case. And because the Romans levied two new armies every year, a lot of Romans fought. They provided their own equipment. So younger men would have often just the sword and shield, maybe a pilum. And sometimes they wore these big bronze chest plates. These would be the Hastati. Older men would be in the Principe, they'd be wealthier, they'd sometimes be able to afford chainmail or certainly heavier armor. And the veterans would be in the Triarii, they fought slightly differently and there were less of them, half as many. But the Romans developed this thing called the manipular system, where instead of just deploying in battle lines, they divided their men up into maniples of 120, and they then deployed these in what I think for a lot of people will be the iconic Republican Roman checkerboard formation. This would allow the skirmishers out in front, the Velite, who were the youngest men of the army, to hurl javelins and do their skirmishing, and then filter back through the gaps in the checkerboard to either go back to the back to re-equip and resupply, or Scipio liked to filter them out to the flanks to extend his battle lines. You can't see this, but I'm doing lots of cool hand gestures here. after which, as the lines started to clash, the Romans would then expand their Hastati to cover the front line and move into something more traditional, but they had a huge amount of tactical flexibility here. The gaps allow them to really pick apart phalanxes by trying to bait men forwards. They could expand to form a battle line. They were very good at maneuvering and exchanging fatigued units for unfatigued units. A big change in the way they fought, and it served them really well. I think that one of the hardest things when you're writing a supplement about this period is deciding how you want the rules for the manipular system to look. Obviously, historical sources are existent, but they're not perfect. A lot of Polybius's histories are gone. A lot of other sources are not, like, we don't know exactly if we're right about how it looked. It's always difficult, but I really wanted, when I was writing the rule for the manipulative system here, to encourage people to deploy in this checkerboard formation, which I think is really iconic, and provide rules for players to stay in this formation and like fight like this in the way that I think gamers will want Republican Roman armies to look in their triplex assies with the my Latin pronunciation. I'm sure someone's going to be mad at me for that. I think that was wrong.
It's better than mine.
Yeah.
But just as you were describing the Roman line and the checkerboard and how troops filtered through and were used by different generals, all I can do is look at the pictures of these amazing new models and see how they're laid out in the photographs on the Warlord website and think, wow, like to be able to play that out on a tabletop using these models, fantastic.
Yeah, it's going to be really cool.
Now, I know that you also did some work with some special characters that appear in this book for this time period. Can you talk about some of the characters that appear that we can look forward to?
Yeah, absolutely. For the Carthaginian side, obviously Hannibal. His two brothers, Hasdrubal and Mago, who both commanded armies for long periods to mixed success, but Mago certainly was very good. Beyond that, Hasdrubal Gisco is a man whose historical record is maybe not great. He's in a lot of defeats, but among his contemporaries, he was very highly rated. And finally, a thing about the Carthaginians is that they're all called Hanno. You find as you write Carthaginian history that they only really had about five names for their nobles. Hanno, son of Bomilcar, is how this one's normally differentiated. And he is the fifth Carthaginian special character. He led some famous actions, including a maneuver at the Rhone crossing, which allowed Hannibal into Italy, where he was previously stuck behind the Gauls. On the Roman side, they obviously had, because of the way the Roman political system worked, which I can talk about in a second for your historical tangents, because of the way the Roman political system worked, they had a lot of generals over the course of the war, but obviously famously, Scipio Africanus, his father, the identically named Publius Cornelius Scipio, and Publius's brother Gnaeus, who both commanded for long times in Spain. There are rules for Claudius Nero, who is an ancestor of the Nero who fiddled as Rome burned. It was a very good general in his own right. Did some extremely impressive stuff here. And rules for Varro, who commanded the Roman legions at Cannae, to less success than some of these others, you might say somewhat charitably. Five great characters for each side. Options for lots of different points, though, is if you just want, like, if you're playing, like, a point-based game, if you just want someone cheap to lead your army, or if you want to splash out and take, like, a Scipio or a Hannibal and have a really impressive general.
Now, you did mention you were going to get into the politics of it.
Yeah, so, the way Rome worked was that every year, they would elect two consuls who would run Rome, and run the military especially. People could serve multiple terms, but they were very rarely consecutive. Each consul would come in, they would levy their consular army, which was just their army they led for the year, which consisted of 24,000 men. It was two legions of Romans and two legions of troops levied from the various socii, who were the cities allied to Rome around Italy, the other Latin cities. They would deploy their Roman legion in the middle, and on the flanks they deploy their ally, which was their allied legions. They would be replaced every year, there'd be a new army every year. The Romans abandoned this after the early catastrophes of the war. They elected a dictator, a guy called Fabius, who came up with this thing called the Fabian strategy, which basically consisted of running away from Hannibal in Italy and letting him burn things. It worked, but the Romans did not enjoy this. They did not like seeing Italy be burned. They had this for a few years. They didn't suffer any horrendous calamities or get hundreds of thousands of men slaughtered, but they did watch some farms get burned, and so they abandoned it. They elected two consuls, Varro and Paulus, who levied their armies. They combined their armies, which the Romans barely ever did. When two consular armies combined, they alternated command in what sounds like the most awkward system ever devised, where one guy would lead the army one day, then the other guy would lead the army the next day. Luckily, they at least both agreed in which direction the army should be going, so they didn't just march backwards and forwards. But they took the army to Cannae. They got it slaughtered. They lost like 80,000 men. It was crazy. And then the Romans immediately returns to Fabius and being cowards again. They got a lot of armies killed. And this was kind of a factor of Rome of this time period. The manipulative system was great. Their armies on the field were really good, because the men kept themselves trained, because they didn't want to get called up to serve and immediately stabbed to death by a Gaul. But the commanders weren't super great, and they were good at fighting. They were really bad on campaign. They made a lot of mistakes. They weren't good at managing their supply lines. It messed them up in Spain at the start of the war. They got caught in a lot of ambushes. They really liked to just send consular armies to get slaughtered with bad campaign work and like ambushes and stuff. This war, they did a lot of learning on that. They got a lot better at it, but at the start, they were really bad for it. They were just like, get an army killed, levy another one, immediately get it killed.
Not ideal.
No, it led to a change in the way they built their armies, because at the start of the war, military service was reserved for the citizenry. You had to be a landowner. I forgot what they called them. But you had to be a landowning citizen class to be called up to serve. And they started to run out of those pretty quickly. And they like steadily proletarianized the army, like reducing the requirements of how much land you had to own. At one point, they were levying slaves. They forced a bunch of prisoners to serve at Beneventum. They sent armies with penal legions, and the prisoners were told that if they brought back the head of a Carthaginian after the battle, they'd win their freedom, which was fine, except it turned out that that made them worse at fighting, because when they got a head, they carried it everywhere and became very encumbered and like much worse soldiers, and the commander had to quickly say, it's fine, you can all be free, just stop carrying these heads around, please, and fight properly.
That doesn't seem a terribly well thought out plan.
It really wasn't. So a lot of changes as to how Rome recruited and like viewed who could serve in the military over the course of the war as a result of the horrendous manpower attrition they suffered.
Hmm. But it does sound like a lot of these elements going into what we were talking about earlier tie in directly with how these battles are played out using these awesome new miniatures in the epic scale, given the makeup of the armies and how the scenarios are played out. It really sounds like this box brings that time period to life.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. The Roman models, you can make so many different, even within the Roman army, like you can assemble and paint some allied legions. You can paint some penal legions. You can paint the regular Roman legions. The Carthaginians obviously have this really colorful and lively panoply of different, men and troop types, this huge range of ethnic backgrounds for their armies. You can definitely bring it to life with the models. And
I've heard a little bird say that we are going to be seeing more than the miniatures that have already been leaked on the Warlord website. I'm not going to get into what, but there are going to be more coming out for this. So if you are hungry for this scale and you really want to play the Punic Wars, stay tuned to the Warlord Games website. Now, if you are paying attention to the website and you are checking the pre-orders page, we will see lots of different options. I'm sure there'll be a book. I'm sure there will be different army sets. We are, of course, going to have the Hannibal box set, which, of course, includes the Scipio mini game. So there is going to be a lot to get into for this and additional support over time with other types of units. War machines, perhaps, so you can really play out these battles on the tabletop. Ben, it has been a real pleasure to talk shop with you today. Thank you for making the time, and I am looking forward to seeing more information about this on the Warlord website, and hopefully we'll be able to talk more about this box set closer to the release date.
Thank you for having me on. It's been really fun.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to the Warlord Games official podcast. If you have any feedback for the show, of course you can message Warlord directly through their customer service page. They are always looking to hear from you. Or you can go to the podcast network that this podcast appears on, Cast Dice, CASTDICE. If you go to Cast Dice on Facebook and you message the page, as many of you do, I will be the one responding to you. I check and respond to every message that the page receives. And we do use your feedback when thinking about what episodes and what topics to cover on this show. So again, thank you for joining us. And until next time, we hope that you are enjoying playing the games that Warlord have for us to play. Stay safe out there, guys. Good night.